This week on the Electronic Intifada podcast, an Israeli army's recruitment plan aims to incite Christian-Muslim tensions. A lawyer says that Israeli soldiers savagely beat a hunger-striking Jordanian prisoner. A report from the Gaza Strip with our correspondent Rami Al-Megari, who talks about the closure of the tunnels by the Egyptian army while Palestinians in Gaza mark the end of Ramadan.
The last month has been sort of difficult for the population of the Gaza Strip simply because of the scarcity and the shortfall of some goods and commodities, basic ones actually, because of this shutdown of the tunnels.
And news from the boycott, divestment, and sanctions movement, including news that an anti-Palestinian group will monitor boycott activists on campuses, and Delta Airlines drops an Israeli settlement-made snack from its onboard meals after customers protest. I'm Nora Barrows-Friedman, associate editor for the Electronic Intifada in Oakland. This week, journalist Jonathan Cook reported that leaders of the Palestinian minority in Israel, quote, have accused the Israeli authorities of intensifying efforts to push Christian and Muslim communities into conflict as part of a long-running divide and rule strategy towards the country's Palestinian citizens. Cook says that the allegations, quote, have been prompted by a series of initiatives to pressure Christian school graduates into the army, breaking the community's blanket rejection of the Israeli army draft for the past 65 years. In an Orwellian inversion, Cook states, leaders from the Palestinian community, Christian and Muslim, who have been outspoken against this new enlistment effort, have been called in for investigation by Israel's secret police. They have been accused of incitement to violence. The report adds that the issue first came to prominence last October when the Defense Ministry quietly staged a conference close to Nazareth, the effective capital of Palestinians in Israel, to promote military service among Christians. The participation of three local clergymen in the conference sent shockwaves through the Muslim and Christian communities. The move was seen as a prelude to launching a more general recruitment drive among Palestinian Christians. Currently, both Christians and Muslims, comprising nearly a fifth of Israel's population, are exempt from conscription. Cook reports that a newly established Christian-Jewish political party has been formed by a Christian Palestinian in Nazareth, which, along with encouraging Christians to serve in Israel's army, it has also paired with a far-right Jewish nationalist group, Im Tirtzu. Im Tirtzu, Cook writes, has been behind various McCarthyite campaigns, including pressuring Israeli universities to dismiss staff seen as left-wing, lobbying to strengthen Zionist values in the school curriculum, and seeking penalties for Israeli non-governmental organizations supporting the rights of Palestinians in the occupied West Bank and Gaza Strip. Officials in Nazareth have warned that their city is at risk of becoming a flashpoint for intercommunal fighting if Israel continues to stir up sectarian tensions. Azmi Hakim, the leader of the Greek Orthodox Community Council in Nazareth, told the Electronic Intifada that the issue of military service is an essentially contentious one for the Palestinian minority. Most Palestinian citizens refuse to join the army because they reject the role of the Israeli military in oppressing other Palestinians and in enforcing an occupation that violates international law. However, there are strong objections on other grounds. Hakim said, quote, Israel has tried to use military service as a way to break us up as a national group since the state's earliest days. It wants us to be weak, separate religious communities incapable of organizing and demanding our rights. The Druze community, of a similar size to the Christian one, has been conscripted into the army since the 1950s. As a consequence, Israel designated the Druze a national group distinct from the rest of the Palestinian minority and created a separate education system to inculcate, quote, Zionist values. Those were excerpts from a longer report by Jonathan Cook. For much more on this story, visit electronicintifada.net. The Electronic Intifada reported this week that a lawyer with the Palestinian human rights and prisoner advocacy group Ad-Damir says that five Israeli soldiers, quote, savagely beat a hunger-striking prisoner on Monday, August 5th, after he asked why he was being transferred to another section of Soroka Hospital, where he is being held. Mohamed Rimawi, along with two other hunger-striking prisoners, has refused food for 99 days, Ademir stated on Wednesday. Rimawi stopped taking vitamins, water, and minerals on Sunday and, quote, is suffering from severe problems in liver and kidney function, general weakness, fatigue, and dizziness, and is unable to walk without assistance. After the attack, Rimawi was shackled to a bed and was visited by an Israeli officer who threatened to force-feed him, an often painful and widely condemned practice, and threatened to move him to solitary confinement without providing any medical treatment until he dies in his cell, according to Ademir. When Rimawi complained about the attack, the officer reportedly told Rimawi that Israeli forces can treat him as they wish, quote, due to the lack of international attention on his case, particularly from Jordan. Along with the two others who have refused food for 99 days, Rimawi holds Jordanian citizenship. According to Ademir, the Jordanian hunger strikers, quote, are demanding to be released from Israeli prisons to serve the remainder of their sentences in Jordan, in line with previous agreements between Israel and Jordan. Israel currently enjoys normal diplomatic relations with Jordan after the 1994 Wadi Araba Treaty signed by the two countries, an effort that coincided with the Oslo Accords between Israel and the Palestine Liberation Organization. The two other hunger strikers with Jordanian nationality, Abdullah Barghouti and Alaa Hamad, are in critical condition. According to Ademir, quote, Barghouti is shackled to a bed by his right hand and his left foot and is guarded by three Israeli soldiers. Like his fellow hunger striker Mohamed Rimawi, Barghouti has been threatened with force-feeding should he fall into a coma. There are currently 12 hunger strikers in Israeli prisons, and Israel has used various tactics to try and break their will. Ayman Tbishe, who is protesting being held by Israel without charge or trial under indefinitely renewable administrative detention orders, told Ademir he was held for 5 weeks in isolation in a 2x2 windowless cell with a mattress on the floor. Tbishe says that five other strikers, including Mohamed Rimawi, have been held in similar conditions. Meanwhile, the Electronic Intifada added in our report that two ill Palestinians in Israeli prisons recently swallowed more than 40 pills at Ramleh Prison Clinic in an attempt to take their own lives, Man News Agency reported yesterday, citing a statement issued by the Palestinian Authority's Ministry of Prisoners Affairs. The prisoners, quote, were disappointed after their cases were not included in the ongoing negotiations with the Israeli government seeking to free detainees ahead of resuming peace talks, according to the ministry, which added that there are 18 seriously ill Palestinian prisoners hospitalized at Ramleh Prison Clinic. The ill prisoners have petitioned PA leader Mahmoud Abbas to prioritize their cases in any talks with Israel to release prisoners. Those were excerpts of a longer report. For much more on the current situation of hunger-striking prisoners in Israeli jails, visit electronicintifada.net and go to our Rights and Accountability blog. We now go to the Gaza Strip. As many Palestinians celebrate the end of the month of Ramadan, Egypt's military has tightened the restrictions of movement between Egypt and the Gaza Strip, closing the Rafah crossing for 4 days during the Eid celebrations. Egypt has also closed dozens of tunnels used for transporting goods and basic staples into the Gaza Strip as Israel's siege continues. Joining us to talk about the current situation in the Gaza Strip is our correspondent Rami Al-Megari. Rami, thank you so much for being with us on the Electronic Intifada podcast. Can you talk about the last month in Gaza during Ramadan as Egypt's army has closed many of the tunnels between Egypt and Gaza and the impact that this has had on Palestinians, especially in the last week?
Thank you for inviting me again to the broadcast. According to my own observations, not only as a journalist in Gaza, but also as an ordinary Palestinian living in this coastal enclave for years, for decades now, the last month has been sort of difficult for the population of the Gaza Strip simply because of the scarcity and the shortfall of some goods and commodities, basic ones actually, because of this shutdown of the tunnels. These goods and commodities include the fuel, which has been brought into Gaza through the underground tunnels, and being sold for some good prices for the population. This fuel has got very high, the prices for the fuel has got very high, also the people had to wait in during very critical hours of their fasting day, had to wait with in long queues with their cars, waiting for the fuel to be filled in their cars in very critical moments of the fasting day, and also after the fasting day. Yani for example, myself, I had to spend about maybe 4 to 5 hours. I would like to tell you a very little story about this, Nora. Actually, I had to bring my kids with me. I was having my kids with me in the car, and I wanted to stop at that gas station nearby to get some my share of the scarce Egyptian fuel, Egyptian benzene, actually. And I expected to have it in about maybe maximally in 30 minutes. But unfortunately, I had to stay about 5 hours, let me say 5 hours, waiting in the queue since the evening, the fall, the start of the night's fall, until about 2 o'clock in the morning. And the kids slept in the car, and it was really a very, very tough moment for me, which I took very patiently and tolerantly because I am a Palestinian. Only because I'm a Palestinian, living such a very bad and worst condition ever in this part of the world. This is an example, a very real example of me. And I just told myself I had to stop such a mess, because it's really a mess. It's unhuman. It's any human at all. So what I wanted to tell you is that I turned to Israeli benzene, which is being brought from the Israeli crossings, mainly the Kerem Shalom, which is being brought to Gaza in limited numbers, actually, in limited quantities. But I had to manage, actually. I had to run my car less than usual, to use some Israeli benzene, which is expensive. Absolutely, it is really expensive. 1 liter of benzene costs about $2. $2 the 1 liter of benzene cost in Gaza, which is in Gaza, it's not in the United States. It's double the price of the Egyptian smuggled fuel, which has been facilitated by the Egyptians on the crossing. But since the Egyptians have started or have begun shutting down the tunnels, the people of Gaza have had many difficulties getting such a very essential commodity, not only for the cars, but also for the power generators that run in the Gaza Strip. And I would like to tell you a very, very, very really interesting thing, that since the fuel has been lacking here for the past month, many households in Gaza stopped functioning their own power generators because of the inflated prices. Not all the people are journalists, not all the people are doctors, not all the people are physicians, not all the people are just professionals. We have ordinary people. It's a population of refugees living in very densely populated refugee camps. So, and the situation is very bad economically. So about 65% of the people are under the poverty line. This is an estimation of the situation, the statistical figures about the situation economically in Gaza. More than 70 other percent are, or more than, sorry, more than 32% are unemployed or jobless. That is really the situation. So the people cannot afford some sort of inflated prices. This is one of the examples that I touched myself, I have touched. Another example, which is related to the inflated prices of the goods in the Gaza Strip. Many goods are being stockpiled in Gaza, Egyptian brought or Egyptian brought in under the Egyptian tunnels or underground tunnels. These goods, the food stuff and other things that are very basic and essential, have had very inflated prices as well. So everything is getting higher in the price because of the shutdown of the tunnels. This is a sort of an impact on the situation of the situation in Egypt on the Gaza Strip. And I'd like to tell you that since then, there have been very, very little goods and commodities. Even I can confirm to you, it's little. It's not only a few, it's little, very little, or rare of goods and commodities coming in to the Gaza Strip, to the extent that already goods that already exist in the stores in the Gaza Strip have been purchased by the people with also inflated prices. So this is double the suffering of the population from an economic perspective.
Rami, despite the restrictions, despite the closure of the tunnels, and despite the scarcity of the goods on shelves in shops and markets in Gaza, how have people been celebrating, especially during the last few days, the end of the month of Ramadan? Talk about what you've been doing with your family, how people are celebrating.
That's what I was about to tell you, actually, because in the past few days, my family or my children, like many children of the Gaza Strip, they're all quite similar. They are all quite similar in terms of their wish and their interest to celebrate or to mark the special occasion of the Eid that comes right after the ending or the end of the Ramadan month. I had to take my children to the market for the Eid, for marking the Eid occasion. Okay? This really has surprised me as I entered the shops with my kids trying to choose for them, to select some good clothes for them. I discovered that the clothes that exist in the shops are those from the past, before the restrictions, before the latest recent restrictions on the borders between Egypt and Gaza. And now nothing is new. And even though the prices of these clothes are very high and unaffordable, to the extent I was myself confused whether I can afford this or can't afford that. That's what the situation when I was entering the shops in southern Gaza, trying to get some clothes for my children.
All right, we're going to have to leave it right there. That's the voice of Rami Al-Megadi. Rami, as always, we will continue to follow your reports from Gaza on the Electronic Intifada. And on behalf of all of us at EI, happy Eid to you and your family. Thank you so much for being with us on the podcast.
Thank you too, Nora, and for you also.
And now we go to news from the global boycott, divestment, and sanctions movement. The Electronic Intifada's Ali Abu Nima reported this week that a group that works against Palestinian rights plans to increase its surveillance on American campuses in an effort to remove the, quote, element of surprise that it says has contributed to the growing success of boycott, divestment, and sanctions campaigns. Scholars for Peace in the Middle East, a decade-old group supported by leading anti-Palestinian and Islamophobic funders and figures, announced in a July 29th email to supporters that it had launched a new initiative called BDS Monitor. Alex Joffe, who, quote, has been affiliated with the Middle East Forum, the outfit of Daniel Pipes, will head the initiative, the email states. Pipes, himself a former board member of Scholars for Peace in the Middle East, according to the group's website, is one of the most notorious figures in the Islamophobia industry. Daniel Pipes launched a website called Campus Watch a decade ago, a McCarthyite project that kept a so-called blacklist and encouraged students to spy on and report their supposedly anti-Israel and anti-American professors. For much more on this story, including the financial ties to some key figures in the Islamophobia and anti-Palestinian industry, visit our Lobby Watch blog on electronicintifada.net. In other news, the Electronic Intifada reported that Delta Airlines, one of the world's largest carriers, will stop serving snacks manufactured in an illegal Israeli settlement in the occupied West Bank on its flights from Tel Aviv. Who Profits, a research project of the Tel Aviv-based Coalition of Women for Peace, learned that Delta Airlines will stop serving the Ahava Vanilla Halva bar 3 weeks after a customer filed a complaint with the company's legal department. The Ahava Vanilla Halva bar is produced by Ahadut Factory for tahina halva and sweets. The company has a factory and its main offices are in the Barkhan industrial zone in the occupied West Bank, writes Who Profits on July 31st. Ahadut further profits from Israel's settlement enterprise by running another production site in the industrial zone of Ariel West, also in the occupied West Bank. The Ahadut factory is a major provider of tahini sesame paste for the Israeli army, according to Who Profits. The Electronic Intifada provided details of the case, including the case number, to the Delta Airlines Corporate Communications Department in Atlanta, Georgia, in writing and in several conversations by telephone, in order to give the company ample opportunity to deny or challenge any of the facts reported here. The company declined to do so. For much more on this story and more news from the boycott, divestment, and sanctions movement, visit our activism and BDS blog at electronicintifada.net. And that's it for our weekly Electronic Intifada podcast. For news, information, cultural features and reviews, pointed opinion and analysis, and action alerts by our team of correspondents and bloggers, visit us online at electronicintifada.net. This week, be sure to check out our newest features, including Krishna Saravanamuttu's Israel Advises Sri Lanka on Slow Motion Genocide, Lina Al-Safin's Stop the Obsession with What Palestinian Women Activists Are Wearing. Also, Brutality Is in My Veins, says a former Israeli soldier. Why Does the BBC Plead Ignorance on Palestine? David Cronin on Dexia, a sleazy bank aiding Israeli settlers. A blog linked to the Israeli army calls for the murder of children. In Photos, Ramadan in Jerusalem. Mystery and reality overlap in a Gaza-inspired novel. Our regular feature, The Month in Pictures, exhibiting some of the most moving photographs from Palestine in July. Architects help envision Palestine's landscape after apartheid, and much more. At electronicintifada.net, you can also post comments and sign up for our daily email digest. Follow us on Twitter at Intifada. Radio stations are free to use this podcast, and we're now on iTunes, so be sure to subscribe and have the EI podcast automatically downloaded. On behalf of all of us at the Electronic Intifada, thank you for listening.